Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We are going to have some fun on the program here today. We always love it when there's a little log thrown in the fire of the Georgia-Florida rivalry, and we predicted. Now, we get lots of predictions wrong, but one of the predictions that we made on the show not too long ago was that the presence of Tim Brewster, just given his sort of blustery history as a Florida tight ends coach, might be a good thing for the Gator-Hater rivalry, because ultimately, while we don't like Florida, we do like rivals. We like kind of going back and forth with stuff like that. We just think all that kind of stuff is fun. And I think it's also really good when a moment occurs that's instructive, something that becomes kind of a perfect snapshot to help us understand other things that are going on. And I think the Georgia-Florida rivalry was summed up perfectly, the current state of the rival that the Dogs will face in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, was summed up perfectly by something we saw over the course of the weekend. Florida tight ends coach Tim Brewster tweeting out a little braggadocious line, a boast from him. He says, "Man, awesome that the Gators now have the number one class in the nation for the class of 2021. Now, I think this is on the heels of Florida getting a tight end commit. I don't know his name. I'm not even sure. But I believe that's the genesis of the Brewster tweet there. 14 commits now for Florida for the class of 2020. Now, or I should say for the class of 2021. Now, what I wasn't aware of, somebody had to tell me this on Twitter. Come to find out, Florida actually doesn't have the number one class. If you go to the 24/7 Sports Composite Team ranking, Gators are actually number two right now. It's Ohio State with number one. And obviously, you understand how this works. A lot of this is about the, you know, sort of total number of commits that you have. But nonetheless, Tim Brewster bragging about being number one in the country for recruiting, he says, for the class of 2021. And what's interesting about this is we're obviously a long way away from the culmination of all of this in December or in February. And Georgia, for the most part, really hasn't started really swinging for the fences yet when it comes to recruiting. We know that's coming up. I'll show you later on. For the most part, the SEC schools have kind of gotten off to a relatively slow start in recruiting here. Florida's taken 14 commits. Eight of those are four stars. Only one of them, though, ranked in the top 100. So Florida's kind of like the, you know, all-you-can-eat buffet of recruiting right now. They've got gobs and gobs of quantity. I guess you can decide for yourself how much quality. But nonetheless, it's highly ranked by somebody. Apparently somewhere, it's number one. So Florida assistant coach Tim Brewster said, "Hey, look at us. How about these Gators? We are number one in the country for the class of 2021. Now, that's a stark contrast to Georgia, who has actually finished, not been number one in, what month is this, March? Not being number one in March, but actually finished with the number one class twice in the last 3 years. But even upon winning the title of best recruiting class for the year, you almost never hear Kirby Smart brag about this at all. In fact, he seemingly goes out of his way to sort of say the opposite of that. So you got a guy in Tim Brewster is like, "Hey, look at us. It's March. We're still months away from anybody signing a letter of intent. But as of right now, we're the number one class." Put aside for the moment, they're not actually the number one class, but that's what he's saying. He's bragging about that. Yet to go back to February of 2018 for a moment, when Georgia, for the first time under Kirby Smart, actually finished with the number one class, this is what Smart said then.
"Obviously, I'm excited about the class, and I know all you guys want to talk about the ranking. That really does not float my boat or the staff's boat. I don't think that's what's important. What's more important is the quality of kids we were able to get, both academically and athletically. That's what excites me most about them."
So Kirby Smart says, "My staff, me, the number one ranking does not float our boat." Since we just heard Kirby Smart say that, can I see, for those watching on video, the Tim Brewster tweet on the screen once again? Just a little context for this. And, of course, if you're listening radio and podcast, you don't see that. You just heard Kirby Smart say, "Listen, being number one doesn't float my boat." And Smart, after they were number one again for the class of 2020, essentially said something close to the same thing. But Tim Brewster in March is like, "Man, it's awesome. The Gators now have the number one class in the nation for 2021. I mean, doesn't that just tell you everything you need to know about the difference between Georgia and Florida? And if you're a Georgia fan, kind of worried about, you know, what it's going to be like for you in 2020, what your path to playoff is, ESPN, Heather Dinich, the writer, already told you the other day that she views Florida as the biggest obstacle for Georgia along the way to that playoff. Here's what I would tell you as a Georgia fan. I obviously am one. I got the Georgia G on my shirt here today. If Florida's the biggest obstacle for my favorite team making the college football playoff, then I say bring it on. Because that mindset right there that Tim Brewster just expressed, I think it's a losing mindset. I think it's the kind of thing that shows Florida is content to be satisfied with less than the best. Number one in March, let's see where it is come December. Let's see where it is come next February. My guess is far from number one, and deep down Tim Brewster knows that. This is simply a grift to take advantage of Florida fans who are so desperate for good news. They'll take anything, even something as inconsequential as a high recruiting ranking with 14 commits in the month of March. Deep down, Brewster knows that and understands that. And really, in a lot of ways, he's simply playing off the playbook or singing from the hymnal that Florida coach Dan Mullen has kind of made part of his story at Florida thus far as well. I mean, go back to last year when Georgia beat Florida on the field. Third year in a row that Georgia had beaten Dan Mullen. Second year in a row that Georgia had beaten Mullen as the Florida coach. It seems like to a lot of people, and by the way, we'll do our Gator Hater Updater for you again at the end of today's program on Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door. But the results of last year's game seemed to suggest that the gap between Georgia and Florida was not getting closer. If anything, it was getting farther and farther apart just based on the winning streak that Georgia's put together against the Gators and against Mullen individually. However, at the end of that game, Mullen saw it different. Apparently, Mullen seemed content to take a little bit of a moral victory out of what he thought was a relatively close game against UGA. Here's Dan Mullen.
Dan, Georgia's kind of been the standard in the SEC the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Two cracks at them now. Overall, you've done great against rivals, but this one's eluded you so far.
Mm-hmm.
How close do you feel Florida is to reaching their level as a program?
7 points.
Do you use this game as a measuring stick for where you guys are at overall?
No, we're 7 points behind Georgia. I know that.
So congratulations, Dan. You're 7 points behind Georgia. You're number one in the recruiting for the class of 2021, like 10 months before it all comes to an end. Congratulations. You're doing great out there. As I said before, if Heather Dinich is right and Florida is the toughest obstacle for Georgia to make the college football playoff, then folks, go ahead and make your travel plans. Pasadena, or where's the other game this year? It's not Pasadena, whatever. I think a lot of Georgia fans hope to go back to the Rose Bowl. Whatever the travel plans are, go ahead and do those. Get ready for it. Because if Florida's all that stands between you and your favorite team being back in the playoff, the mindset coming out of Gainesville, that's not a playoff mentality right now. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, and we're glad to have you with us no matter how. You get to us today live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. It's good to be back on the air in the Classic City after being preempted a couple times last week for the Lady Dogs in the SEC Women's Basketball Tournament. Of course, podcast form, now on Spotify, Google, Apple. I post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. However you find the podcast, you can find that for you there. And, of course, it's all brought to you today by our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. And they can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. And this is a very good, very important thing because, let's face it, when it comes to keeping energy inside your house, a energy-efficient door and energy-efficient window can help do that. Over the long haul, that can save you money on a heating bill or an electrical bill or a gas bill or something like that. Plus, it improves the curve appeal of your home as well, which could also lead to increased value when you go to sell. It's all the reason why Pella Window and Door of Georgia is a company the Dog Nation Daily believes in and we recommend, and they're making things great for you here as well with a very special offer right now. You can currently get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months. Now, this offer is only valid through March 12th, so you need to act right now. Contact them to get a in-home consultation or either by phone or by email. Very easy to remember. Let me give you PellaBranch.com is the website. That's PellaBranch.com. Or give them a call, and you can schedule an appointment at their Dunwoody showroom, 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door, Georgia, is viewed to be the best. All right, we'll get John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. And in this space, over the course of the next couple of days, one of the things we're going to do is a little bit of a spring practice preview. I'm going to do that here in a moment with a look at the Georgia offensive line. I'll give you a couple thoughts on that. I also want to set you up for the BA Q&A for today. We'll do this on the forum at forum.dognation.com. We'll do this live on video on our Facebook, YouTube, Twitter comment sections. Of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. You can put a comment in the show page when we post the show at dognation.com later on. Your thoughts on today's questions, let me show them to you. And, of course, we'll kind of explain some of this throughout the program, I guess. Here's the first one. Now, you don't have to give me all five names if you want to. If you want to give me just one single projection on this, this is fine. But the first question, what will Georgia's starting offensive line be here for 2020? You can kind of weigh in on that. We'll talk to John about that here coming up in just a moment. I mentioned that Heather Dennich from ESPN says that Florida is Georgia's biggest playoff obstacle. You can tell me what you think on that, what you think the biggest playoff obstacle for the Dogs is this upcoming season, if there are, if you see any out there. And then after another kind of disappointing loss for Georgia to close out the regular season against LSU on Saturday, how do you think the Ant-Man era will be remembered at UGA? Ultimately, what's his legacy, and ultimately, how do you think this impacts the future of Georgia basketball? I'd love to hear from you on all those topics today. It's our BA Q&A here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Now, let me go around the doghouse on the subject of the offensive line for a moment, because I do think this spring, and spring practice begins a week from tomorrow, I do think the offensive line is going to be one of the most important topics, especially after what Georgia went through this past season. If you want to go back to last summer, UGA entered the season as an offensive line unit with a great deal of hype. It was talked about as potentially the best offensive line in UGA history. It was talked about as potentially the best offensive line in the country. But there was evidence maybe right from the get-go that this group may have a hard time dealing with the weight of those expectations. Do you remember the first scrimmage way back in August when the reports coming out of Athens were that the defense got the better of the offense that day, and the offensive line in particular may have had some issues? Kirby Smart talked about that on that particular Saturday. That was the first sign we got that, hey, living up to the hype of being the best offensive line in the country, not necessarily going to be an easy thing to do. Here's what Kirby said then.
You know, I know that if you're not scoring points on offense, there's probably not going to be a lot of all lining up for awards. And, you know, we didn't score a lot of points today. So at the end of the day, it's one of those things, how well you perform, what is your identity, what are you trying to create? Because there's some good players on that offensive line, but good players got to play good.
So listen, a lot of guys on that Georgia offensive line, to use Smart's phrase, did play good this season. Andrew Thomas played well enough that it certainly seems like he's a shoe-in to be a first-round pick coming up in April's NFL draft. Isaiah Wilson played well enough that he at least made the decision to leave and try his hand at professional football as well. But the unit overall did have some issues, probably not as strong running the ball as it had been in the past. Statistically speaking, probably fell short of a couple of those benchmarks. And then by the time you got to the Sugar Bowl, the group that Georgia played with there that day, not to mention Sam Pittman leaves to go take the Arkansas head coaching job, but with Matt Luke in place as offensive line coach, Georgia had to turn to some new look guys. Warren Erickson getting a start, Jamari Salyer getting a start at tackle, Cade Mays was there, now he's gone. That group kind of thrown together at the last minute to go out and play Baylor, but they did get the job done there that day. And after the game was over with, I had a chance to talk to Matt Luke about what he saw from the unit and what he was looking forward to as he gets ready to begin his first full year as Georgia's offensive line coach. Here's what Luke said then.
Well, it's all about them. Those guys, they stepped up to the challenge. We had three normal starters out, and those guys stepped up. They took the challenge. They went wire to wire and played every snap. So really proud of those guys for stepping up.
How eager are you to get to work for the 2020 season now?
Yeah, that's what I was telling them. This is not the end. This is something. This is the beginning, and we can really build off this.
Luke says, this is not the end. This is just the beginning. He said that to start the year in January in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl. He says, we can get to work and build off this. The next step in that process, building off what happened for this group in the Sugar Bowl, does begin next Tuesday. Now, it's also been ongoing in the weight room and everything else. But in terms of on-the-field practicing, that gets going right now. And I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how this group plays out in the spring. I think there are probably three big questions to deal with here. I think the best offensive lineman on paper for this group right now might very well be Jamari Salyer, a guy that started at right tackle during the Sugar Bowl. And there's some online chatter that maybe Georgia considers him at the other tackle spot for this upcoming season, even though he's probably, in terms of NFL projection, a guard. Or at one point in time in high school, we talked about him even being a center. He seems to be a tackle at Georgia for now and possibly even a left tackle. How will Jamari Salyer be used? We'll talk to John Stinchcomb about that in a moment. Also, for a group that's going to clearly have some new starters in place, how important are the returning starters going to be. I'm talking about Trey Hill, that bedrock for you in the middle at center. Ben Cleveland, after not playing in the Sugar Bowl, coming back to be a part of this team again here this season, trying to make a name for himself and then step into the NFL role. A guy that was a sometime starter for Georgia, on the field a lot, but not a full-time starter really in any year thus far during his UGA career. What's it going to be like for him? I think these are all really, really important questions to address about the offensive line. It begins next Tuesday with spring practice, but to keep our preview on this going, I want to bring in a guy who knows the offensive line really well. It's John Stinchcomb. He was an All-American in this spot for the Georgia Bulldogs. Obviously played for a long time with the New Orleans Saints. We're lucky to have him here as a Dog Nation analyst, and we'll talk to him about this and a whole lot more. It's one of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Time now for a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb. And I feel like, see, we're about a week out from the start of spring practice. Thought this might be a nice time to get some of this conversation going. If you're going to look at some of these position groups for the spring, really no better group to do on a day that John's going to be with us than the offensive line. So, John, with that in mind, I'll say good morning to you. Thanks for spending some time with us and hope you had a nice weekend.
Morning, B.A. Had a great weekend. Yeah, pretty weather. Able to get outside. It wasn't raining. That's always a welcome change.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I enjoyed the sunshine there myself. And I guess with that in mind, let me talk to you about the offensive line here for Georgia for a moment. Spring practice getting going next Tuesday. I'm curious about the offensive line. I think this group has a couple of known commodities which you feel good about. I think some of the unknowns, maybe the most intriguing part of all of this, heading towards G-Day in the month of April to see. And in particular, let me start with Jamari Salyer here for a moment. As I told our audience before you joined us, Salyer's a guy that I think of as a guard. When he's in the NFL, that's the position I'm assuming he's probably going to play. Yet he started at right tackle in the Sugar Bowl. There's been some online chatter of, hey, maybe George would even try him on the other side, just given the fact that he's probably the most dependable lineman that Georgia has at the moment, most known commodity, at least on the outside spots there. A lot of young guys at the tackle spots trying to earn their way for some playing time. How do you think the best way to use Jamari Salyer would be?
Well, I think you have to look at it as a whole. I mean, you're trying to put your best five out there, and what Jamari brings to the table is flexibility. I think similar in the same vein as to what Cade Mays had offered Georgia in the fact that they're versatile. They're great athletes. They're offensive linemen at heart. I think Cade's probably natural position was more a tackle. He was just versatile enough to play inside. And I'd say the similar concept is true for Jamari, where his natural position, just watching the way he moves and his body type, he's probably more naturally a guard, but is so capable and has the ability to flex out and be a tackle. So for Coach Rhule and really the entire staff, they're trying to figure out what's that best five. Do we have two tackles that are ready and we can leave Jamari in his more natural position inside, or is it, we're stronger on the interior with Warren Erickson and some others and be able to flex Jamari out just because of what he brings to the table. I think in an ideal world, you leave Jamari inside and you've got two tackles that are ready, but obviously you've got some pretty big voids with the loss of Kenley, Wilson, and Thomas that you've got to fill, and you're trying to figure out the best way to go about it.
I think, John, one of the good pieces of news when it comes to Salyer is when you look back at the career of Isaiah Wynn, a guy that ironically, I guess, is trying to be a tackle at the NFL level, but at one point in time was kind of thought of as an interior offensive lineman as well, kind of got deputized into duty at Georgia as an offensive tackle and went on to be a great player at that position, despite the fact that he doesn't have necessarily the size that you typically think of at that offensive tackle spot. So it's not like even in the Kirby Smart era, we haven't seen someone travel down the path that Salyer could potentially be traveling down.
You're right, but I'd say Isaiah Wynn came in as a tackle, and people just started to look at his height and say, well, he can't make it on the outside, despite the fact that that's where he really excelled. I think similar could be said for undersized defensive ends. I think back to guys like David Pollock when he came out. The guy was a great defensive end, and they're trying to mold him into an outside linebacker, a space player, just because of his shape. Some guys are just really good at what they do. Jonas Jennings is another one because of his height. They're saying, oh, I wonder if he's going to be a guard at the next level. Nope. He's, you know, had a great career in the NFL, both in Buffalo and San Francisco at tackle, despite being not your prototypical, you know, 6'5 plus guy. He was able to excel despite the fact that he wasn't, you know, one of those fit the mold type.
So unknowns at certain positions of the offensive line, a little curiosity with how Salyer may be used, but the guy that you're sure about is, you know, Trey Hill's the center right now, and I think the assumption is that Ben Cleveland's going to slide back in and maybe be a right guard again. How important is for those guys to have really good springs, given the fact they're playing positions they're familiar with, at least that's my assumption on Cleveland anyway, they're playing positions they're familiar with, given the unrest potentially around them, being able to lean on guys who've been in a spot before, who know how to do that? How important is that going to be?
Well, it should speed things up. When you lean on veterans, what you're leaning on is the fact that they can recognize, get everybody on the same page, and execute quickly. For the young guys, if you come in and you're spending time trying to figure out, you know, what am I doing? What's the protection? Who's my guy? Where's my hot? You're not playing fast, and that's to your detriment. When you're playing next to a veteran, you can take some of that thought process out. They can help you and figure out some of the mental aspects so that you can get out there and play. If you're surrounded by nothing but new guys, then you're all out there scrambling together. But when you're next to a Trey Hill who's seen just about everything you could see and has made the calls and gets everybody lined up and on the same page, it makes it a heck of a lot easier to get out there and just play. You're not worried about where your hot is anymore because it's been told to you. So now you're just worried about, you know, your technique and how you're going to execute the assignment.
So when it comes to a guy like Ben Cleveland, who's been in the program now for a while, came into Georgia as part of the class of 2016, a starter sometimes but wasn't always a starter last year for UGA, how does a guy like that draw the balance between – I'm a veteran, I'm a leader, I've got to help young offensive linemen, but I don't, and I'm just being as honest as I can here, I don't want to help them too much because these guys are trying to kind of push me out and get playing time from me. If you're a veteran player like that, I mean, obviously publicly he's going to say all the right things, but privately I wouldn't fault him for obviously wanting to make sure he could do everything he could to hold on to his position and hold on to his playing time. How do you strike that balance?
Well, I think you worry about yourself, and that sounds selfish, but it's the opposite of what it sounds like. I think, especially when I was a player in the NFL, you recognize there's only so many jobs out there, and I felt like if my game was at the top of where it should be, then I didn't really have to worry about anybody else. And I think Ben's in that same boat of I'll help you, I'll teach you, and what I see. Because I have so much confidence in my game that you can't worry about exterior factors. I think there's a right way to go about things, and being a team guy is, in my opinion, the right way to do it, especially when you have confidence in yourself. You get out there and you perform at a high level, I'm willing to help anybody on my team that can help.
When you check out the Marlowe's Tavern in your neighborhood, one of the things you're going to notice is what we like to call house-made magic. Now, you'll be saying, what does that mean? What is that? Trust me, when you sit down to eat there, when you sit down to enjoy a beverage there, you're going to notice this. Nothing's frozen there. It's all like house-made right there in the restaurant. That means no microwaves, nothing like that. Everything is freshly prepared. Great care taken to make sure that each ingredient is really, really enjoyable. I've told you about the shrimp and crab nachos before. I love the shrimp and grits. I love the way that everything is just taken and kind of just kicked up a notch with special care. Cocktail-wise, very much the same way. True expertise behind the bar, behind the kitchen, in front of the grill to make sure that everything that's served to you is going to be something that you're going to really, really enjoy. That's why we recommend you check out the tavern right there in your neighborhood. Boy, yesterday would have been a great time. I was actually thinking about this. I drove by the Marlowe's Tavern and coming on my way home after running around with my family a little bit yesterday, and I was like, boy, this would be a great day to be on a Marlowe's Tavern patio. So for those of you who got a chance to enjoy that yesterday, I hope you had a really good time. Marlowe's Tavern is a great thing to think about this time of year as we head towards that patio season. John, let me talk to you about another offensive line spot here for a moment, or at least a couple other guys competing potentially at a couple of different spots. So Justin Schaefer was a guy who was probably that number eight man or so on the depth chart during the season, and then dealt with the neck injury. He was in line for some playing time and then kind of battled injury. And then after that, Warren Erickson was a guy who got a chance to start in Georgia's most recent game. So handicap this for me. Who's in a better position heading towards the spring? The guy who was arguably higher on the depth chart earlier in the year, or the guy who had a chance to play in the most recent game that Georgia played? That would be Erickson.
Well, I think Erickson probably has the early lead just because he's had the experience with Coach Rhule, who came in and working with that offensive line. So with Justin, I mean, he's got the talent, obviously, and was in the hunt, but you've got to compete, and Warren's had that exposure, and you live in a world where it's, what have you done for me lately? And I thought he performed pretty well in a thrown into the fire type situation of stepping in in a bowl game against one of the most talented defensive lines coming out of their conference. So I think he has the early lead. And I think that also speaks to, the first question we discussed of Jamari Sawyer, in that with Ben Cleveland, Justin Schaefer, Warren Erickson, slightly more known commodities than what you have on the outside with Xavier Truss and Condon and some of the other names that are thrown around when you're talking about the tackle position. So it might be necessity that says Jamari's going to, at least in the beginning, start out as a tackle, because you've got a little bit more of a bird-in-the-hand situation in the interior.
You mentioned Matt Luke, the new offensive line coach. Is it? I'm sure this.
Luke, there we go.
No worries. Both guys coaching the game, so it's. But the point is, I'm sure for a lot of these guys who maybe found themselves buried in Sam Pittman's depth chart, I'm sure they probably look at the Luke era as a chance for them to make a name for themselves. Right? If you weren't necessarily in line for a lot of playing time when Pittman was coaching here, kind of a fresh start under a new coach. That's just human nature, right?
Yes, and it's a clean slate. I mean, honestly, you got a little bit of a jump start because of the bowl game situation with Pittman leaving and Luke coming in, not Coach Rhule, who's out in Carolina coaching up the Panthers. Jeez, come on, man, keep them straight.
No worries.
But with Coach Luke coming in, I mean, it is new, and that's the exciting thing. You know, spring ball can get to be a little bit monotonous, especially for a vet who's been in a system for a while, or you've got the same coach, and it just seems like we've been there, done that. That's very much not the case for this offensive group. One, there's spaces available. There's three starting spots that are up for grabs. And two, you got a brand new coach in here that you're looking to impress, Trey Hill included. I mean, guys that want to show this is my spot. I want to take some ownership as you build that momentum going into August. This spring camp is important to put a picture in your coach's mind with you having a viable spot and kind of writing your name in pencil and in one of those positions. So it's a good situation. I think as a program or for a coach, they want you to have some skin in the game and recognize that this is an important opportunity. I'm sure that's very much the case for this offensive front.
So we're doing our BA Q&A, which is just a couple questions I ask to the audience. They share their responses with me. If you don't mind, I'd like to kind of close out our time with getting a couple thoughts from you on this. Now, one of our questions today relates to the offensive line. I think at this point in time, we've gotten enough from you on that topic. So I'll ask you the other two here for a moment. Heather Denich from ESPN, John, said that she viewed Florida as Georgia's toughest obstacle to the college football playoff. Obviously, her reasoning makes sense. It's the game that Georgia probably can least afford to lose compared to, you know, a road game in a place like Alabama, for instance. But if I were to say to you, what's the toughest obstacle preventing Georgia from making the college football playoff, what would your answer be?
I liked her answer, and it stood out to me because it jumps in front of some of the bigger games on that schedule. I mean, I think you look at that first game against Alabama, that's an exciting one, not to mention there's so many other good opponents on that schedule. But the reasoning behind putting that game against Florida, because it's a conference game, where it sits on the schedule, it made a lot of sense to me. I liked her explanation for that game. what I like is that the schedule looks to be healthy. You've got some good opponents spread out throughout. You know, there are some years where you look at the schedule and you see nothing but some of the known commodities. You know what you got in the Auburn game and the Florida game, but having Alabama early and the way the schedule plays out, moving that South Carolina game back deeper into the season, and then still having something to prove because of the way that we laid an egg in that one this previous year, it looks to be a much more entertaining, and you know, there's some really good big games on that list for fans as we go into this season.
Last one for you as part of our BA Q&A here on our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. You know, you've told us before you're a basketball fan. John, Georgia lost by 30 to LSU on Saturday. After really playing better for a little stretch here, kind of close on the regular season, ugly home loss to finish off that stretch of the year, ugly regular season finale loss to LSU on Saturday. And for all intents and purposes, the Ant-Man era is now done. How do you think that Ant-Man era at Georgia is going to be remembered? As a springboard to, you know, more good recruiting classes and making Georgia more of a, I guess, visible, you know, trademark on the college basketball scene, kind of a lost opportunity. How do you think the Ant-Man time at UGA will now be remembered?
Well, it was such a Jekyll and Hyde season, right? I mean, you had some big wins. You think of the Memphis game. I mean, they played competitive basketball against some really good opponents and then laid some eggs. I mean, I was there for the home game against South Carolina and, you know, that finishing on such a low note against LSU. I mean, there were some ugly losses along the way. You give up double-digit 20-point leads against Florida twice. I mean, it was there's some things that you get pretty frustrated with just looking at it. But hopefully I'm going to err on the side of optimism that, you know, you listen to Coach Green and he's talking about building a program. And that's not done overnight. It's not done in 1 year. My hope is that having Ant-Man and the national attention that was brought to our program is a positive. This season, it was eerily similar record-wise and productivity-wise to what we've almost grown accustomed to with Georgia basketball, and I hope that needle is moving, and we may not be able to see it superficially, but underneath there's some growth in that program, and there are better days ahead because you know, you want to have the right horses in the stable, and having 1 year with Ant-Man, I mean, I think most fans were hoping for a better single season if we knew it was a 1 year rental, and it really wasn't. So my hope is that there's program growth, and that having the recruits, not just with Anthony, but some of the others that came in. It'll help with the stability of the program and bring in the right players that can continue to progress this overall basketball program we've got.
Yeah, I think that's all really well said, John. I appreciate you taking some time to talk about that with us. And, of course, we appreciate all of your insight here as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. I will look forward to speaking to you again soon. Hope you enjoy your week, and thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily.
Always a pleasure, B.A. Go Dogs.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really good stuff from John. And, you know, the honest truth is, and I guess I'll probably do more of this in a moment, but as far as our BA Q&A question goes about the end of the Ant-Man era, the honest truth is I'm not as down on this as maybe some people are going to be. As I've said on a previous show, we never predicted Georgia to be an NCAA tournament team this year anyway. That, you know, you look at Ant-Man, who I think is fun to watch, and I think he's made Georgia basketball more fun to watch. Frustrating there have been so many blowouts, and frustrating that you really end the season maybe feeling no better off at the team than you did to start the season. All that's frustrating. But in terms of what this season I think always was going to be for Georgia, I just think that it still has a chance to be that. A springboard to more good recruiting classes, you know, more interest in the program, Ant-Man going on to have NBA success. I think will be a little bit of an advertisement there. We hear Dwayne Wade and Victor Oladipo and guys like that say good things about Tom Crean. Maybe one day Ant-Man will be speaking, you know, in a press conference saying, hey, you know, I learned something from Tom Crean. And, you know, maybe you get there. Honestly, I think you're hard-pressed to find any evidence that this program's trending in the right direction right now. There's very little evidence of that. But in terms of what it still could be, it still could have some value if it makes Georgia feel like more of a basketball destination. Always really weird how, you know, Georgia feels like such a hotbed for athletics, but the men's basketball team in Georgia has never been able to tap into that energy source for very long at all. So Crean faces a tough job at UGA. The players that come here, you know, have a lot of options that at times can seem more attractive. So it's a tough situation, but an ugly way to close out the regular season campaign with the LSU loss on Saturday. I mentioned off the top of the show as we do our SEC through here that, you know, Florida, Tim Bruce, are kind of bragging about being number one. They're actually not currently number one. According to the 24/7 Sports Composite Team ranking, they are number two. But when you peruse these rankings, and admittedly, I really hadn't done that as of yet, it's kind of interesting how slow of a start most of the big-time SEC powers are right now. Florida, the only SEC team in the top 10. After Florida at 2, you have to go all the way down to 12 to find any other SEC team. That's Tennessee. They've got only 6 commits thus far for the 2021 class. 5 of those are 3-stars. So Tennessee off to a bit of a slow start as well. Next SEC team, believe it or not, is Georgia. And Georgia's only got, what, 3 total commits for the class thus far? So Georgia's 17th in the country right now with just 3 commits. Auburn also has 3. They're at 18. LSU's got 3. They're at 20. A&M's got 3. They're at 21. So that's about par for the course for SEC right now. A lot of these typical recruiting powers, barely inside the top 25, only just now kind of getting going. Georgia actually didn't get its 3rd commit until Friday. So we've had dead period. We're kind of getting in one of those deals where as we head towards a lot of spring games, we'll have a lot more visits taking place. You've also got some guys getting ready to make some announcements too. So a little bit of a slow start for everybody for the 2021 cycle, but that's about to start heating up a little bit. You may have seen this story at DogNation.com over the weekend. Urban Meyer was interviewed by the Florida apologist Buddy Martin, and in the interview, Meyer was talking about Dan Mullen, and he basically said, hey, he thinks it's Mullen's time to win the East, get by Georgia. To Meyer's credit, he says, you really can't say anything if you're Florida until you do get by Georgia. So from that standpoint, Meyer speaks the truth. But he sort of predicted that this is the year that can happen, and I guess kind of alluded to the possibility that Florida can make the college football playoff this year, seemingly telling Martin and his readers more of what they wanted to hear than maybe speaking truly from the heart on this. I don't know that that Meyer's March predictions a binding referendum on anything, but I guess my one takeaway from this is Urban Meyer saying these things really doing Dan Mullen no favors, right? Because we've always predicted that when things eventually go south for Mullen, and eventually they're going to, when things eventually go south, it won't be people like me who kind of throw dirt on Mullen. It's going to be Florida fans themselves who come to find out, say, to Tim Brewster, you bragged about being number one in March, but where were you come December? Where were you the following February? Hey, Dan Mullen, you bragged about being within 7 points of Georgia in 2019. How about that final score result in 2020? When some of these things don't turn out the way that Florida fans want them to, they're going to remember the things that Mullen has said. They're going to remember the things that some of his assistants have said. And they're going to remember that Urban Meyer said at the beginning of the year, this team ought to be in the college football playoff. So Meyer, I think, probably thinks he's doing a favor for his former offensive coordinator. But laying out these kinds of expectations for Florida fans, I think it will eventually not really be doing them very much of a favor at all. By the way, let me mention something about a different Georgia rival for a moment. And Auburn's going to get some criticism for this, but I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have a problem with them doing this whatsoever. Let me show you this. If you're watching on video, if you're listening, I'll describe it to you. So Justin Ferguson goes to the brand new Auburn facility. Is this the only one we have? Do we have the other picture on this? Okay, so here's one picture. It's the 2019 Iron Bowl with the 48-45 Auburn win over Alabama. Actually kind of a nice photo. Auburn player knocking the Alabama player's helmet off. I don't really quite know how that factors into the new player safety concerns. But nonetheless, it's a cool image to see the helmet flying off the Alabama player as the Auburn guy runs past him. And they also have, much the same way that some schools might have a list of championships, if you've ever been to like the Brave Stadium, all the division titles and, you know, National League pennants and things like that year after year after year. Well, Auburn's got a big thing in their indoor facility for all of the Iron Bowl wins. And they've obviously got the most recent one and every single other one after that. They've essentially hung banners for rivalry wins. some people are going to treat this as Auburn playing too small. And admittedly, if Georgia started hanging a banner in the indoor facility for every time they beat Florida, I would like it. I love beating Florida. We celebrate the Gatorhead Updater, but I think it's beneath Georgia to hang a banner for beating Florida. I just don't think that's the kind of thing that Georgia ought to celebrate and remark in that way, because it's not that big of a deal. However, with Nick Saban and Alabama, to that program's credit, beating Alabama is a pretty big deal. And I think one of the things that Auburn can say is, relative to how Alabama has performed against other teams, Auburn's actually done pretty well against Alabama. Saban and Malzahn, the rivalry between those two coaches may not be quite as one-sided as you think. And when you go back and factor in the Tommy Tuberville era and all that kind of stuff, Auburn actually has a little bit of bragging rights against Alabama. Not the ultimate bragging rights, because Alabama's won a million national championships and everything like that. But in terms of honoring itself for Iron Bowl wins, I actually think that's a pretty good brand for Alabama, for Auburn right now. So people will notice the Justin Ferguson tweet. He covers Auburn for The Athletic. Auburn's going to get some criticism for this. People are going to say that they're being small-time, little brother, whatever else. I don't have a problem with it, and I think that's actually kind of a cool thing to do. One more thing on our SEC through here. Our buddy Mike Griffith confirmed with the SEC office that as of right now, there are no plans to make any kind of changes to the men's basketball tournament slated for Nashville this week. And I take that as really good news. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a coronavirus expert. I just think that our country really needs a big distraction like March Madness right now. Can't wait to see that usher its way into the stage here over the course of the next few weeks. I think the city of Nashville really needs an SEC tournament. They've been rocked by, obviously, a horrible tornado. We talked to Stephen Lassen from Athlon Sports about that on the show last week, about what it's been like in Nashville. Downtown has really been impacted by this. A horrible death toll, a loss of property, just a very, very sad situation. You know, I'm no scientist, and, you know, you should consult everything else in terms of what you feel comfortable and what you feel safe doing. But I think the city of Nashville needs the SEC tournament right now. I think our country needs March Madness and the great distraction that can be. So I take it as really good news. The SEC is plowing ahead right now with the SEC tournament. I'm really glad to see that. And we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily for a moment, presented by Pella Window and Door, we'll also take some time with our BA Q&A. We'll give you a chance to weigh in on anything today's from today's show that you want to, but also a chance to answer these questions as well. I'll remind you once again what they are. The three questions: UGA starting offensive line for the upcoming season. Weigh in on that. Let us know what you think. You don't have to pick all five. That can be a little tedious, but if you've got one big opinion in mind on that, you can kind of share that. Also, John Stinchcomb was good enough to answer these for us a moment ago. The biggest playoff obstacle for Georgia for this upcoming season. You can tell us your thoughts on that for today. We'll get your thoughts on that. And after a bad basketball loss for Georgia against LSU on Saturday, Ant-Man era about to come to an end one way or another, you can give us your thoughts on how all of that comes to a conclusion and ultimately how that's going to be remembered. So if you're watching on video, we'll take some of your comments live. I'll put these in the Dog Nation forum. You can weigh in there at forum.dognation.com. If you're a radio podcast, most of you that listen to the show actually listen far after it's been recorded live. If you want to weigh in on your answers, you can do so at the forum. I should say, to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, or you can put your comments in the show page when I post the show at dognation.com. I'd love to hear from you on all of those here today. So, not great news for Georgia basketball. As I said, men got beat bad by LSU. Lady Dogs got knocked out of the SEC tournament, but there was some better news in other sports. You had baseball team, nice performance against UMass over the weekend. You had a couple of former Dogs that stayed in contention at the Arnold Palmer Invitational over the course of the weekend. Harris English was there. Keith Mitchell was kind of involved in the leaderboard in that one. So a couple of decent showings from some former UGA golfers in the PGA Tour. Softball team had like a walk-off win, kind of a crazy deal against South Carolina. It was kind of an interesting thing to see. So better days for some of the UGA athletic programs, if not the best for the basketball teams involved there. The one good news is that Gatorator Updater, that keeps climbing. We're now at 1,227 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Really good news, and really glad to have all of you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Have a great day, everybody.